Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back in, everybody, to the Stat Sheet Podcast. A privilege to have you on board, as always. We are back in Studio A with Simon Short, Studio C with myself. Ronan Summers is away celebrating his birthday. Who knows what he's doing or where he's at, but, we'll have more on that later in the podcast. We appreciate you being with us. Double dose of Monday Night Football this week. We've got more upsets this week. We've got more beatdowns this week. There was everything to talk about. We're going to cover as much of it as we can in a reasonable amount of time, and we're going to do it very well. Simon, let's get rolling, man. Giants and Packers, Monday Night Football, first thoughts.
Yeah, first thoughts for this game was it looked like two very young teams were playing against each other in Giants Packers. An extremely fun, a much more fun game to watch than I anticipated. I was totally ready to go into the game looking for my super niche type of things that I needed to find to talk about when we kind of drew straws for the games tonight. But look, it ended up being a wildly entertaining game. Tommy DeVito, 17 of 21, 158 yards and a touchdown. I mean, modest numbers, but just he looked good. He looked sharp. I mean, the four incompletions, and this wasn't screens and dump offs. He wasn't pushing the ball quite like Jordan Love and the Packers, but I mean, the ball was going downfield a little bit. He was using the middle of the field. In particular, the thing that stood out for him was he was running. You know, he was getting out there. 10 carries for 71 yards. That's his season high for him. His previous season high was against the Cowboys, and he had 7 carries for 41 yards. So he blew that number out of the water, and it really helped impact his pocket awareness and pocket presence, I think, just knowing he could go to that, because he took 0 sacks in this game, which was huge, because in his previous 5 games, here are the sacks that he took: 2, 6, 5, 9 against the Commanders a couple weeks ago, and 6 again last week. So DeVito was something I'll talk about later, a prime example of what you do against a backup quarterback. And it's just you blitz and you pressure and you disguise blitzes and you get home, because they're not quite processing at the same speed as a starter. But it seems here in game number 6, the game caught up to him, or he caught up to the game, I should say, and he was able to get out and move around and do stuff. So really ended up being a fun game. The Giants rushed for over 200 yards. The Packers and their young passing offense continues to be entertaining. So fun game overall, Ben.
Yeah, and without deep diving into the game, which we will here in a second, let me just reflect on the New York Giants for a second, because they looked horrible this year. They looked horrible 4 weeks ago against the Dallas Cowboys and against the Raiders before that. I mean, they just look like a disaster. And here, the last 3 weeks, we've seen this Brian Daboll-led team look a whole lot more like what we saw last year. And that is, hey, even if they weren't winning these games, they would be competitive. But they've actually won 3 in a row of these games. And so I like the fact that they have worked themselves back in from being miserable, awful, dreadful, really a joke, to be honest, to, hey, we're back competing, and we're not quitting, and we're developing, and we are getting better, and we are winning these games. So, you know, it says a lot for Brian Daboll, because I know for myself, I loved him last year. I had some questions about how he was handling a few things early on this year, and now we're starting to see that kind of kick back in. So, you know, listen, they're not going to be in the playoffs or anything, but I love to see that part of it.
Yeah, it feels a lot more, you said this right at the beginning, like it should have all season. Like, and maybe this can all just be explained away. And I think we said this a couple weeks ago, like maybe this really all just was injuries. The offensive line was completely beat to all get out from game one. Daniel Jones gets hurt a bunch, because we even saw Tyrod Taylor in his first couple games. Like they looked okay. So maybe all the bones are still there, right? Everything is still intact from what this team was last year, where it looked like hey, they're a year ahead in the rebuild. That's how they ended up having to re-sign Daniel Jones again. And we thought that they'd maybe be right around the 8 to 10 win range. And then when you sustain that many offensive line injuries, it's another feather in our cap, Ben, for just being obsessed with the O-line play and really caring who's there, because it really seems like that just messed them up for weeks. And, you know, Andrew Thomas has been back for a couple weeks. I think they've settled into who their current group is. For the most part, I mean, Mark Lewinsky is out of the lineup. Like I liked going into his stint here with the Giants. Evan Neal has been out of the lineup, I think. So I think they've just settled into the group. Thomas is healthy, and it's really helping them get back to where they were.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, sloppy game tonight. I would have given credit to either team for competing in this game or for winning this game. It was just that kind of a game. This was a fun game to watch, even if, you know, no matter what the records had been on this game. But credit to the Giants for, I mean, with DeVito here, I mean, you kind of figure they're done at the end of the game, right? It's like, oh, well, nice try, guys. Way to go. Monday Night Football, you covered the spread. Wait, no, here they come to actually win the game at the end. And without saying anything negative on the Packers side, way to go, Giants, to come back at the end, especially with DeVito in there, not Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, to get the ball back with 93 seconds to go, down 1 point, and just need to get yourself into field goal range, and you're doing that starting from your 25, and you're like, man, you've got a long way to go against a defense that knows now exactly what you want to do. They've played against you for 58 and a half minutes, right? They know. And yeah, they just march right down the field, and you know, good on them for, I don't even think they had timeouts at this point. I'm trying to remember. I think they had used all their timeouts already. So, I mean, they were just smart. They waited until the end of the game to really be very like methodical in everything that they were doing, but it was passes to the sideline, Wandell Robinson, guys were getting out of bounds, Saquon was getting out of bounds. Utilizing the right weapons, and DeVito just looked calm and confident back there. It was pretty incredible. To now shift to some of the sloppy stuff that went on in this game, where it looked like two young teams playing against each other. Man, the special teams on this one was just wild stuff. You had two muffed punts to start the second half, which led to 10 of the points scored in this game. Another big penalty in the first half on a punt by Green Bay almost led to more points by the Giants, but it's okay because the Giants missed the field goal that came after that. So you have 10 points resulting from special teams errors on both teams, a loss of 3 points from missing a field goal. Not that it was a super easy at 48 yards, and it was very windy at MetLife in this one. But the special teams aspect really got to both teams. And that's something that, like, for the Packers, who are very much in this wild card hunt, like, you don't want that at this point of the season. So they got to make sure they clear that stuff up so they can try to make a push here to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and emotionally for me, well, fan, coach of the Packers, whatever, this one hurts because, dang it, we could be 7-6, man. And the rest of the games, there's a lot of winnable games there on that Packers schedule, and yet now we're behind the eight ball. We had a chance to be ahead of it, 7-6. Now we're behind it. But if I'm a general manager of either one of these teams, I know two things. Number one, I've got my work cut out for me during the offseason, which I already knew that. I know I need to add more support to everything we're doing on both sides of the football. But the other thing I know is both of these teams are competing. And as a general manager, I feel good about that. My coaches, my quarterbacks, my defense, my offense, everybody's competing. We didn't kind of just – and I don't ever mean to question any NFL player's effort, but that ability to not get blown out in games like this, to actually win games like this late in the year, to actually put together a three-game win streak when, quote, it doesn't matter. You know, that matters to me as a general manager. I want to see that. So I like, you know, I can start to feel good about both of these teams heading into the offseason as a general manager because I like what I'm seeing here, and I feel like if I keep giving them more pieces, more talent, more stuff, more toys to play with, that we'll keep getting better results. So I like what I'm seeing out of both of these teams here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that we already mentioned with New York, like, you almost like, man, did we, you know, get sold a false bill of goods here and giving Daniel Jones this extension? And now I mean, yes, you still have some very big decisions to make this offseason when it comes to not having him. This win might further the idea of it being less complicated as the weeks go, right? As you get further away from maybe taking a top quarterback in the draft, but you feel like, okay, I feel good about everything else that's going on. Now, if Daniel Jones can just be healthy and we can fix this offensive line, maybe we could be rolling on Green Bay's side. You love that they, as a young team, didn't crumble, right? And a young team should be able to do that, right? Because, hey, they don't really know any better. The Troy Aikman made an interesting point on the broadcast where he said he likes that Jordan Love doesn't have a clear veteran top-tier receiver one that he feels like he has to go to, because then he can spread the ball around, and that helps him be able to, like, really, I guess, like, probably read through the progressions and, like, really use the offense and not just have to feel like he has to go to the number one guy. It's probably good for all the other receivers because they, you know, get equal share. They get the ability to work on stuff. I mean, I forget the guy's name, Michael Heath or something like that, gets the game-winning touchdown. It was his first touchdown catch. He's an undrafted, you know, rookie free agent receiver playing behind, you know, five draft pick receivers of the last year or two, and he gets the game-winning touchdown. But yeah, I mean, they went on this nice run here. They're what, 1-2-3, 3-1 in their last four, 4-2 in their last six after starting out 2-5. And you mentioned it, man, they have super winnable games. They have the Bucks, the Panthers, the Vikings, and the Bears remaining on their schedule here. So that'd be really interesting. What do you think of Jordan Love specifically? How have you been feeling about him? I've been pretty high on him all season, even when the results don't match the process that I've seen from him week in and week out in terms of managing the pocket, arm talent, some decision-making, even when it's not the best. The accuracy wasn't great today. I do attribute some of that to the wind, but again, DeVito, like, didn't have the same issues. But Love was just missing some things, right? Left, high, low, a little all over the place. But overall, they tried to show a stat that kind of confused me. I just saw it very quickly flash across the screen. I thought they had a stat that said he had the seventh lowest on target rate, but when I went on StatHead, I found he had the sixth highest on target rate. I don't know if maybe theirs was like the inverse of that, where it was like the highest number of like off target balls, and if it was a raw number instead of percentage, I don't know what it was. But overall, he's been pretty accurate on the season. He had some trouble early. He's kind of netted that down, but he was a little all over the place in this one. But what do you think about Jordan Love, how he's playing this year, and then, you know, talking about like moving forward in terms of a further extension, the contract he's under next year, what you think his prospects could look like for next year. How do you feel about Jordan Love?
I feel better and better about him as the season goes on. Now, I still have questions. I still have some concerns, but I feel better and better. So, number one, he's my quarterback for next year, hands down, no questions. I mean, that's, to me, I don't even consider anything else there. He looks like a guy I can win with for sure for the next couple of seasons. Where I stop short at is, do I want to hand him a 5-year contract in which I'm locked in to big money for the next 3 years? I'm not yet sold on that. I might want to in a season or two. So what I'm kind of going to have to do, I think, is sign him to maybe a 3-year deal, where, you know, he's making a pretty good chunk of change. And I get kind of another season or two to see how he's doing, and I get to support him better even than he already is. That's my feeling. So I'm in the past. The one hiccup with him, and this has always been the hiccup, is that you get 2.5 to 3 quarters of ugly, and then you get this beautiful artwork, piece of artwork every fourth quarter. And you're like, wow, this is beautiful. He's on the money. He throws deep. He throws short. He's always poised. He's never making, you know, dumb decisions. I rarely dumb decisions. I mean, you know, and yet you see the point totals are often down, you know, in spite of how groomed he looks. Groomed is a great word for him. You know, he looks so groomed. Man, he looks like he should be wearing a tuxedo out there, you know? I mean, just so I love a lot of stuff here, pun intended. And yet, am I ready to hand him a 5-year deal where I'm kind of locked in for 3 of those years? I'm not quite there, but for me, he's got to be the guy next year. I don't see how he cannot be, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people were definitely overreacting in that losing streak where it was like, yeah, never mind. He's not it. Move, get ready to move on. You know,
Right.
I think give him, yeah, I'd like to see him get an extension one way or another. He's making, I think, five mil next year. His cap hit is just under 8 mil next year. He's making 5.5. And then you've got void years after that. It would be nice. He's got void years through 2027. So what you're talking about, 3 years, can you change those void years so you don't have even the small dead cap that he's going to have there, and
Right.
turn that into something where it's middle of the market? Because yeah, it was funny as you were talking about him. You're talking about like 2 to 2.5 quarters of bad, but then the fourth quarter is great. I'm sure many people had this same thought. The first thing that flashed in my head was Kenny Pickett when you said that. But guys, this is
Yeah.
not Kenny Pickett. This is a guy who from an athleticism standpoint can bring it. From an arm talent standpoint, can raise the ceiling. And yeah, he's just got to like clean up some of this stuff. They put his side by side numbers up on the broadcast of rookie year compared to Aaron Rodgers through 12 games, and it was like identical. And I just felt every fan of the NFC North just shudder collectively at the same time when that graphic went up there. Great stuff. But yeah, I'd like to see Jordan Love stick around in Green Bay long term, because I think he's doing a good job. I have one don't do that from this game, Ben. Would you like to hear it?
Man, I can't wait. This is my favorite segment from last week. Looks like it's going to be a permanent fixture on the show, man. So hit us up with it.
It unfortunately is a little bit of a repeat from last week, but the Green Bay Packers continue to do another rotation on the offensive line, and I was a little torn between how I felt about it, because we've talked about for a couple of years now how we love what the Packers do, where every year they're taking one or two guys in the middle rounds on the offensive line and just seeing who sticks, who works out, because you never know between who gets hurt and who gets signed away and who you want to move around from positional standpoint. And they did it with two positions in this one. And it sounded like from the broadcast that they do this kind of on and off throughout the season. I didn't notice it when they played the Steelers but I think I saw it in the Chiefs game with one of the spots. But they essentially have seven guys playing on the offensive line. And you know, Aikman was talking about it on the broadcast, and he was like, and this is great because it keeps the starters on their toes. They know they have to play well, and it's good development for the young guys. And I get that. But then you look and your starting running back gets like 30 yards a game or something like that. You know, you don't have a run game. And they on the Jordan Love sack in the fourth quarter, Jordan Love took a sack that turned their field goal attempt from what would have been like a 38 yarder to like a 45 yarder that Carlson ended up missing. And they show the replay, and it's Rashid Walker at left tackle, and it's John Runyon at right guard. And those are the guys that have been swapping out, and those are the starters. And they both get beat, and Love gets sacked. And on one hand, you're like, ooh, that's why they rotate those guys, because they both got, they gave up the pressure. And in my mind, I'm like, those guys gave up the pressure because they were probably just cold from the last series and they haven't been in all game. They haven't been seeing the moves that those defensive linemen have been using all game long, because they keep coming in. Don't do that. Just everybody stop with the rotations on the offensive line. It's silly. Put your best five out there. The Giants in this one, Mark Lewinsky, who got benched, they used him as like a third tight end on the Saquon touchdown on the left side. I think it was the third quarter. And they put him out in motion. They let that boy go run out there and just like knock a couple dudes over, like do stuff like that. The Cleveland Browns put Nick Harris, who was going to be their center of the future after J.C. Trotter, and he got hurt, and now it's even postage and everything. They put him out there at fullback. If you want to give these guys chances, you can find other ways to do it, but don't take guys out of the offensive line. Just don't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you, and same thing I said last week. It's mainly because of communication. You really need to know what the guy next to you is going to do. The one exception, and I this would be very difficult to pull off, if you were a franchise that just happened to be really good at drafting and developing offensive linemen, and you were deep, like 8 to 10 deep, I would be okay if you had an advantage in rotating these guys out. Not freshness, but in terms of say, oh, here's our running group, and here's our pass protection group. But man, that is so rare that you would actually be able to develop those guys throughout the week, draft that many guys, and that's really way out there. But other than that, no. You just mentioned that you can do all this stuff with fullbacks and tight ends, and you can do almost the same thing just by putting them in these other positions instead of rotating. So no, I don't like this rotation idea, other than if you can somehow get a matchup advantage out of it. That's it,
Yeah, absolutely. So fun game, really fun game. Don't think the Giants are gonna miracle their way into the playoffs, but it's been fun. The Packers definitely still have a shot, but they have some things to work through. But Ben, as you mentioned, there was a second Monday Night Football game that you got to watch a lot of. Can you talk to us about Titans Dolphins? What did you see? What was your initial takeaway from this one?
Well, my first thing is this game should never have been that close. The Dolphins should have just been able to figure out a way to win, because in theory, they're pretty healthy. Again, they're at home. They're the better team. That was my first impulse. So, I mean, Miami, you got to do better. If you want to be taken seriously as a Super Bowl contender, you have to do better. Now, my second impulse was this. The Titans defense was really, I thought, the key to this game. Okay. Number one, they're when you're playing an offense as explosive as the Dolphins, there are several things you have to have. Number one, you have to shorten the clock on Tua, which they did. It's not like they were sacking him the entire game. They got quite a few and some pressures, but the important thing is short clock. That's the thing. Do not let him sit back there for 3 seconds, 3.5 seconds, and pick you apart. Short clock. So Tennessee repeatedly did that. Uncomfortable short clock. That's number one. Number two is you have the two deep. So they didn't play two deep every play, but they had a lot of two deep, which kind of sort of is supposed to help out with the Tyreek Hill situation, right? We've seen other teams try it. Doesn't always work because the Dolphins are really good at it. But then that brings in element number three, and that is the Titans are just good on defense. They remind me, no team reminds me more of those old Patriot defenses in style than these current Tennessee defenses. They're nowhere near as good, but still, the discipline, the intelligence, the physical toughness, that's all there. And so those three elements right there really is what hampered this Dolphins offense all night long. And that was my first impulse coming off of this game.
Yeah, the thing, that first thing that stood out to me was the sacks. Tua took 5 sacks in this one. I'll, as I'm talking, kind of pull up to see where that ranks for him on the season so far. But they were able to, ESPN was able to cut to this game in the last couple minutes after Packers Giants. And yeah, I mean, you could just see just from those couple minutes, I mean, they were getting around the edge on him. Anytime he tried to step up in the pocket, they were holding their gaps really, really well. And that's something that we've talked about all season with the Dolphins. It's they don't have the most talented offensive lineman in the world. We'll talk about a contract extension here in a little bit on that offensive line, but the Dolphins have just schemed around it so well and utilized their speed of the receivers and the running backs to work around that issue. And they weren't really as able to do that in this one. Tyreek Hill only had 4 catches. Jalen Waddle had 6. I know Hill left the game for a short period of time before coming back in. The Dolphins did have 158 yards on the ground, 96 for Mostert and 47 for Achane. But we know that it's the passing game that this Dolphins offense runs through. And 240 yards and just 61 for Tyreek Hill. And that's hard to, really do anything with. Tua and sacks this season. He took 4 in the loss to Buffalo, and he took 3 a couple of times, but no, he does not get sacked very often, and 5 is a season high for him. So, yeah, Tennessee, he made sure to get after him in this one, Ben.
And listen, I love that because this is going to be a tricky stat line, but let's talk about Will Levis because we have to here. He's got 327 yards passing, but this was again 2.5, 3 quarters of ugly. This was not a pretty game for Will Levis. I'd have to go back and look statistically to get you an accurate number, but roughly, I'm going to look it up here at a glance now. Roughly about 120 to 150 of that yardage came at the last on the last two drives of the game. And I'm going to throw my first yellow flag. We didn't even put in a penalty flag segment this on tonight's show on this Miami Dolphins defense for doing something that I tell people not to do for decades now. I've been telling people, don't back off. Do not back off. And they, not necessarily the last drive of the game, but the second to last drive of the game, when it's 27 to 13, the Dolphins defense backed off completely and just gave up throw after throw after throw after throw underneath. Tennessee goes right down and scores a touchdown. That's when they got the 2-point conversion. Quick turnaround for the Dolphins. They couldn't convert. And then Tennessee gets another wide open 37-yarder to DeAndre Hopkins, which was well designed by Tennessee, but poorly defended by the Miami Dolphins. But again, when you've got a team down, you don't let them back in. And the Dolphins did. Now, hats off to Will Levis. We're going to talk about him. Hats off to Will Levis for doing this because we've seen quarterbacks not be able to do it. We've seen it this year. We've seen so much ugly quarterback play, but here's Will Levis taking advantage of what's being given to him and leading them back into a win. Love it from Will Levis, but the Dolphins opened the door here in doing this, and I'm throwing a penalty flag on them for doing it that second to last drive of the game by backing off and giving up all of these underneath throws, 5, 8, 10 yards, 5, 8, 10, and boom, I think it's what, a minute and a half, I think it was. Minute 54 seconds it took them to go 75 yards, 9 plays. And that's just all underneath stuff, all of it. Hats off to Will Levis because, again, I'm not sure, bless his heart, Bryce Young could pull this off right now. He's just not at that point. Will Levis is. But the Dolphins opened the door on that.
Yeah, when I think just last week we talked about, like, when we talked about Jake Browning and all these backup quarterbacks that are playing, you have to know what they want to target, right? As backup quarterbacks. And it's if there is that A1 number one receiver, it's that guy. So obviously DeAndre Hopkins, 7 catches, 124 yards, and a touchdown in this one. And then after that, it's, yeah, short, work the middle of the field. Tajay Spears, Chig Okonkwo. So whether you're a backup or whether you're a young quarterback, that's what you're, if that's your team's profile, that's what you're going to do. You're not going to spread it around to the Nick Westbrook-Ikhines and Chris Moores and Treylon Burks of the world. You're going to, do I have an all-pro guy? Yep. Okay, I'm going to throw it up to him every once in a while. If I can't get it to that guy, where's my tight end? Where's my running back? Where's my H-back? And yeah, I mean, Miami's got enough team speed to do it. And I know they're the Vic Fangio style defense of bend, don't break, and just make the plays when you need them. But you're playing against a bad team with a bad offense and no running game. I mean, 83 yards on the ground for the Titans in this one. Derrick Henry just did not get going. 34 yards on 17 carries. You know they have to throw the ball. Like, don't make it easy on them. Don't. I completely agree with that. I love that.
Yeah, and listen, have we seen Will Levis throw deep balls this year? Yes, but that's why you just put two safeties deep and you man up everywhere else. You don't give him this easy stuff. That's, to me, that's the difference. And anyway, but listen, Will Levis still comes up with 327 yards. And his toughness, I tell you who he reminds me of, and he's got a better arm than this player, but he reminds me of Tim Tebow, in that Tebow was tough as nails, both at college at Florida and in his short stint in the NFL. Tough as nails, super winning attitude, never gives up. Mentally, you don't get a guy any tougher unless you're talking about maybe Tom Brady. I mean, seriously. So I love the fire there. And then he's got a much better arm than Tim Tebow had. Obviously, he does. But he reminds me of that style, physical guy, got the build, the body build that way. Not quite the upper body Tebow had, I don't think, but still the muscular physique. And then he can move around some. His pocket awareness isn't the greatest. Sometimes he seems a little insensitive to what's around him. But when he does feel it, he can get away from it. He is mobile enough to get away from it and make plays. So there's a lot here to like. And I'm going to say the same thing here about the Titans that I said about the last two teams, and that is found the general manager, which is essentially Mike Vrabel. I mean, I know he's not the GM, but listen, he's got the power there right now. So if I'm Vrabel, I feel good that we're competing right now. And I know next year I've got my work cut out for me, but I feel like if we keep adding pieces, we're going in a good direction, is my feeling on it.
Yeah, it really. We'll see. I'm gonna pull up the remaining games, but it did feel like it was finally crumbling around them there, right? With, okay, you go to the rookie quarterback, Derrick Henry. It looks like he's officially having that first true down year. But hey, the last three games, you go into overtime against the Colts, you beat the Panthers like you should, you beat the Dolphins. Upcoming games, you have the Texans. We'll talk about CJ Stroud and their injuries situation. The Seattle Seahawks, they're beat up. The Texans again, and the Jaguars in week 18. There is, I'm not saying that they're going to go on a run and make the playoffs again, but there's room here to do stuff that you feel good about, to where you're like, okay, maybe similar to the Giants, maybe we're not as far away as we felt like we were even just 3-4 weeks ago, right? When they lose those three games to Steelers, Bucks, Jags. This team is one, it's not the, we hear all the time, we're not rebuilding, we're retooling. The Titans never said they were doing either of those things, right? They told us coming into the season that they were still competing for playoffs, which, like, if Tannehill had stayed healthy, right, who knows? You know, we really don't know. Probably not, but we don't know. But this team transitioned to their, what looks like could be their quarterback of the future, at least for the next couple of years. And they're playing all right, and he's playing all right. It seems like that transition has gone well. And you know what? If Harold Landry is going to be a guy that can get you three sack games and do it without Jeffrey Simmons even in the game, yeah, man, why can't you rebuild this thing in a year or two and kind of be right back there, compete for the AFC South? So I think it looks pretty good so far. You go fix that offensive line a little bit. For God's sakes, find some corners that you feel good about. I mean, we love Roger McCreary, but everything else around that, their pass defense just has been real tough the last couple seasons with the issues they've had there. But yeah, go get you some corners, go get you some offensive linemen, and see what the Levis and Spears and Okonkwo kind of era can, what it can do for you.
Yeah, and it's hard to evaluate some of these young quarterbacks, whether you like them or not, whether it's Jordan Love, Will Levis, Desmond Ridder, because they go hot and cold results-wise. I mean, you go from ugly to beautiful, back to ugly and beautiful. It's like, well, he's my guy for next year, because Levis should be the starter next year. I've seen enough to know that. Like, there's no question about it. But again, does that mean I want him to be my starter for the next 10 years? I don't know yet. So I'm not going to overcommit to that. I'm going to keep supporting him in every way possible. But I'm also going to have in the back of my mind, well, what's my backup plan in case this guy proves to just be decent? Because the hard question is not, well, when he's in on a rookie contract, does he look good enough for next year? That's kind of easy, right?
Right.
Question is, well, you know, is this the guy I'm going to put all my playoff hopes and all my Super Bowl hopes and all my job security on for the next five seasons because I gave him huge money? That's always the huge question, and that's the part where you have to be willing to move on if you think, man, this guy maybe isn't quite there. So anyway, that's where I'm at on these teams. This game here, I've never seen an ending like this. And by that I mean, out of all the games I've ever watched, the Titans fumbled on back-to-back possessions. The Dolphins scored touchdowns on both of those possessions. That's it. Game should be over. It's 27-13, I think is the score. 27-14, 27-13, something like that. It's game over. There should be no comeback. That's it. And yet the Titans come back off of back-to-back fumbles and back-to-back touchdowns to do back-to-back touchdowns of their own and actually win the game on the road against really what is a better team. I've never – as far as I can recall, I've never seen a game like that where you had the double fumbles, double TDs, and then double T. I mean, Tom Brady's pulled off some similar stuff, but Tom Brady's not playing in this game. It was remarkable.
So many in doing this podcast with you and Ronan and breaking down this many games every single week, I feel like I've fully learned the key to winning in the NFL, and it's just don't turn the football over, right? It's 99% of the time, if you turn the football over multiple times to one or zero times of your opponent, like, you're just going to lose. The Titans should not have lost this game, or should not have won this game. They lose the turnover battle 3-1. And like you said, not only – because there's degrees of it too, right? There is, you lose, you have the turnovers and they score off of it, or just even if you don't allow points off of it, you're losing opportunities to have the ball, possess the ball, run time, and score points. And that's usually a recipe for disaster in and of itself. But yeah, to give up 14 points on two turnovers late in the game and still pull it out. Yeah, this is wild. Does that say more to you about where Tennessee is at? Just like the fight, they're competing, yada, yada. Or I'll spin this into a little playoff stuff for the Dolphins. Are you a little worried about the Dolphins? To this point, their three losses had only been the Chiefs, Eagles, and Bills. And I actually just remembered this today. All of those losses were at on the road, so they hadn't lost at home yet. Here they lose at home to a team with a losing record. Does it tell you anything about the Dolphins, or was this just, hey, the Titans came and gritted this one out?
It does bother me here from Dolphins' side, because I am a Dolphins believer to a degree. It bothers me that somebody can slow this offense down. And this isn't the first time we've seen it. So we watched, and they're pretty healthy again. That's a key. They're pretty healthy. And somebody slowed this offense down to where they couldn't even score a field goal at the end. They had a minute 54, no timeouts. But they had a minute 54 seconds. They couldn't even score a field goal. Didn't even get close. I mean, they got barely to midfield, and that was it. You know, that part bothered me, but also we've seen them a couple of other times this year not be able to get the offense going. And so when the offense isn't going, it's, well, what are you expecting in the playoffs here? So that does bother me. Emotionally, hats off to Tennessee for coming back here, because that's a hard comeback. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
When you just give the game away, Titans did. Titans gave this game away, and yet they didn't. They came back to win. It does bother me, though, that Dolphins offense not quite been able to get in gear. Now, I will say, because you mentioned it earlier, Dolphins running game. It's nice to see that. While the Tennessee Titans aren't quite as good against the run as they were last year, they're still very good against the run. Basically, top six, top seven against the run. It is difficult to run the football on the Titans. And yet, you mentioned that the Dolphins running game is back, 31 carries for 158 yards. Mostert looked good. Achane looked good. Even Tagovailoa moved around a little bit. So all of that was nice. Still, though, for this Tennessee Titans defense to be able to lock them down, basically, that's a little bit disconcerting.
Absolutely. Ben, anything else that feels like a pretty good Monday Night Football recap? And anything else from Monday night you want to get into?
One other note here. This is not good for the Dolphins. Dolphins now slipped number 2 seed in the AFC. Now they've got the easier schedule going forward, but now they're a full game behind Baltimore. So, what was Miami's to lose is now Baltimore's to lose.
And yeah, that's a great point that you brought that up. So over on a quick plug, Simon Short podcast, part of Box Score Network, we're doing a two-part series looking at the playoff picture. So last Wednesday, or last Thursday, I should say, when it came out, Robertson Vyer, Ben's co-host on Odds on Favorite, another Box Score Network plug, came on and we talked about the AFC playoff picture. We talked about this run for the Dolphins here. They really needed these two games, man. Titans Jets really would have been nice to lock down those two wins, because Dallas at Baltimore and Buffalo to close out the season. It's going to be a hungry Buffalo team by week 18, I'm sure. Baltimore could still very much be trying to compete for a number one seed or at that point, maybe even probably not the division at that point, but probably very much so number one seed. Dallas competing for trying to win their division and a top seed in the conference. This is tough to lose that. It probably isn't going to doom them for the division or anything like that. But yeah, you want the good seeding when it comes to playoff time for sure.
That's perfect. And this is going to roll right into our news section. But let me ask you a question about Buffalo. First of all, I've never thought about it until just recently, the past couple of weeks. Does Buffalo feel like a team that doesn't play very well when they're expected to play well and when they're a favorite, but when they're kind of the up and comer and people aren't really counting them as a top Super Bowl team, they look like they've just got more energy and more fight in them? I mean, am I wrong about that?
That'd be interesting to look back at in terms of their odds and stuff like that. Because I mean, you think about that Dolphins game, and everyone was riding high on the Dolphins after the Dolphins put up 70, and they came out and beat them, right? And then obviously you have the games against the Giants, the game against the Giants, the loss to the Patriots, the loss to the Jets. You know, so there. I mean, there's definitely something to that. They might be that team at this point that has gotten so in their head about beating the Chiefs, beating the Chiefs, beating the Chiefs, that they almost need something else that's like nobody believes in us kind of deal. That's pretty interesting. But I mean, they're rolling now, man. They're feeling pretty good right now.
And I'll even go back 3 years ago, 2.5, 3 years ago, when they were the up and coming team. Boy, they looked so good. I mean, they just looked like they were coming on. And then everybody anoints them Super Bowl favorites, and they just can't seem to fight their way out of their own shadow to a degree, especially when it counts. Well, that brings us into the Chiefs Bills game that we had this Sunday, which was, while it wasn't the most spectacular game we've had, it was a fun kind of a close game between two teams that have a history here. And then we had the end of game. I mean, good gosh, for those of you who haven't seen it by now, most of you have, we had the crazy play where Travis Kelce throws the ball back to what's his
Kadarius
name?
Tony.
Tony. Yeah, Kadarius
Kadarius
Tony.
freaking Tony.
And then we have the offsides play, and it's all called back, and Mahomes and Reed go ballistic, especially Mahomes. Get us started on that. What direction you're feeling on that?
Yeah, we're gonna focus more on the discourse around the end of the game here. We could talk about the game, but both teams are continue playing the way they had the last couple of weeks when we've talked about them. The big thing is the Chiefs were without Isaiah Pacheco. They only had 82 yards on the ground. That felt like the real difference in terms of the offenses. But yeah, so the last play, the whole thing is about Kadarius Toney was lined up offsides before the play happened. They run the play. It's the great play to Kelce, laterals it to Toney. It's an awesome play. It's fantastic. And we get the penalty for the offsides. And it seems like the two sides of the argument are okay, but Kadarius Toney was offside, so you have to call a penalty. And then there's the why do we care that he was 6 inches offsides? Because that was such an awesome play. Why'd they take it away? I don't know about you, Ben. I'm pretty sure I know where you're going to fall on this. But just line up on sides, man. Don't be mad at the refs. Don't be mad at the Bills. Don't be mad at Andy. Tony, just back up, man. Line up on sides. Don't do that. Don't line up off sides. There's another one. I didn't know where it was gonna come in.
There we go, man. Number two.
And then there's the whole thing about like, well, sometimes they warn us, and you're supposed to point, and sometimes they'll tell you after, and sometimes they'll let it slide. And we're just making up all these, it gets to the consistency. Oh, we're not mad that they called the penalty, but they don't always call the penalty. If you did it wrong, you did it wrong, man. Don't do it wrong. It's like the easiest thing to not do. And now it's funny because as Monday happens, right, we go through stages and stages of this news cycle. So it's like Monday morning, we're all talking about Mahomes and Reed. And then Monday afternoon, we're talking about Kadarius Toney and checking with the refs. And then by like Monday late afternoon to like dinner time, this video circulates of Toney walking towards his place at the line of scrimmage, and he does point to the ref, and the ref doesn't tell him he's offside. Okay, but Toney points to the ref when he's still walking before he gets set, and then he gets set literally 2 feet beyond where he pointed at the ref from. So it's just like, what are we doing? And I never got the whole I point to the ref and he tells me thing. I have been a referee, nowhere close to the NFL, don't get me wrong, but I'm looking at a million other things. Why is it now my job? I'm making, as an NFL ref, what do they make? 50K a year as a part-time ref or whatever it is. Why do I have to tell you who's making millions when I'm looking at a bunch of other stuff? Oh yeah, man, you lined up in the right spot. Good on you. Like, no, if I could do it as a courtesy, that's great. I would love to do that every time. But just take 2 steps back, man. Everyone yell at Tony. Ben, how you feel about all that?
I'm right there where you are. Now, to be fair and to mollify people in the audience who emotionally feel differently, feel the other side, had the ref completely missed it, and we all on Monday saw it that Kadarius Toney was 6 inches past the line, I wouldn't have cared because it did not affect the play. I get it. Had no bearing on this play. Tremendous play by Kelce, who is, while I'm not certain he's necessarily the cerebral Peyton Manning kind of player, I don't think he is. Instinctually, he is tremendous. He is amazing. His instincts for the game, fantastic. But you're 100% right. The ref saw it. The ref threw the flag. Before the play ever got going, he threw the flag. So what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to huddle and say, you know what? This is one of the greatest plays of the season, maybe of the past 5 years. We'll just swallow this flag. They would be fired for that. They can't do that. So the flag already went down. And contrary to what Mahomes is saying, you know, there's been 11 other times this year where they did throw offensive offsides penalties this year, just this year. So I really think a lot of this goes back to A, Mahomes is extremely competitive, even though he's an uber nice guy. He's competitive. And the Chiefs really aren't playing well. And when you got those two things going on, these games matter. And, you know, I think that's really the driving point here, you know. The Chiefs are 11-2 and they're number one seed in the AFC and offense is looking top two or three in the league. I don't think you get quite this level of emotions coming out of Reed and especially Mahomes. But, you know, Chiefs are struggling. Offense hasn't been great. Mahomes knows it. Mahomes knows it's really not probably his fault necessarily. But I really think that's the driving force here.
I'm so glad you mentioned when the flag was thrown, because that was the other thing I was going to say. He throws it right away. It's not like it was one of those where the touchdown happened and we get this late flag, which is so annoying, where it's almost like you did wait till the play happened and played out to decide if you were going to call the penalty or not. They threw it right away. It happened. Now, you were mentioning Mahomes. Let's talk about the Mahomes reaction a little bit. So first we have the Mahomes like being held back by 10 teammates on the sideline from yelling at the refs. and then the very emotional speech at the press conference about just the whole thing and you know, the Travis Kelce Hall of Fame stuff and all of this craziness. And it's a very different tone from the Mahomes we got just last week when after, you know, the Hail Mary in the end zone against the Packers and Kelce gets shoved in the back and Mahomes is like, you know, I don't really expect them to make a call there. I'd rather they let the players play it out. And that's at least a consistent message with what he's feeling now. He would rather the players decide the game, even if the refs are going to miss a call by not calling the whistle. So at least he's being consistent. It's not like he's upset one week that he's not getting a call and then upset the next week that he did get whatever. But what I took from that whole thing more than anything, and I know he's getting clowned on Twitter and everything, but like, man is going through something this week. It was a bad week at the office. It was a frustrating game for him for whatever reason. I don't know, but to have such completely different responses to the end of the game, and it's not like it'd be one thing if it was reverse, right? If this was like Josh Allen freaking out about a play that they called back on Stephon Diggs, where it's like, we just can't beat the freaking Chiefs. It's like, Chiefs are like, we've got the Bills. It's fine. We lose one game to them. My man is going through it. So everyone just ease up. He's having a hard day, a hard week for some reason. They'll all bounce back. Anything else on the reaction for your side?
Yeah, I honestly can relate because I'm wired the same way. I really can. I mean, I'm generally a decent guy most times, but you know, you get that hot button. I'm competitive. I'm in an environment. I'm heated up. Yeah, I'm gonna get lit up too, and I might just have to come back later and say, you know what, I'm sorry. You know, move on. Right. I have those moments too. I don't blame Mahomes and Reed for being lit up. Right. But again, I mean, what are the refs supposed to do here? They can't eat that flag. They had to throw it because they saw it. They can't eat it. And honestly, it's almost a situation where when the referees help receivers out sometimes, but not all the times, it's almost like the wide receivers are coming back to criticize the refs because they don't help them all the time. And it's almost like, well, if that's the case, let's just have the referees never help out the wide receivers as far as offsides. Just forget it. You're on your own. And if you're dumb enough to be past the line of scrimmage, then I'm going to throw a flag on you. You know, I mean, that's really, you know, it's not unusual for people to come back and bite the hand that feeds. Right. So, I mean, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at. I really do think it comes back to the Chiefs struggling. We saw this back in early 2021 when Mahomes was having, you could see him having screaming matches with Eric Bieniemy on the sidelines. And you could also see Travis Kelce in multiple games in early 2021 doing a lot of helmet slamming and a lot of screaming out there on the field. They're competitive. They know when it's not going right, and they know it's not going right now. So that hot button is a whole lot closer to the surface, especially when you're playing a tight one with the Bills.
Absolutely. Both teams are coming down to the wire for playoff seeding and you know, we feel like the Chiefs are going to wrap up the AFC West, but I think if they lose next week and the Broncos win next week, the Broncos might technically be winning the
Can
division.
you believe
It's
that? How
a whole
crazy
mess,
is
man.
that?
It's a whole mess. Yeah, both teams would have 8 wins and the Broncos, I think, have the tiebreakers. It's a whole mess. At the end of the day, these are two very good teams. We'll see if the Bills can do enough to make up for their rough beginning of the season. But it definitely feels like they're on a hot streak. And
Yeah.
the Chiefs have, I think, of all the teams in the AFC, have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. So they should also be fine. That this was a good game against what is a good team despite the Bills' struggle. So it was a fun one. Anything else on this game or anything related to the AFC playoffs that you want to talk about?
Not at the moment. I think we'll hit some more AFC playoff stuff as we go through here. Other news, the Browns signed safety Grant Delpit to a 3-year, $36 million contract extension. The Dolphins signed tackle Austin Jackson to a 3-year, $36 million contract extension, 20 of it guaranteed. How do you feel about either or both of these?
I feel generally fine with both of these. For Cleveland, Grant Delpit, he is a big part of the defense that is much improved this season. You and I were talking before we recorded, and it's like, man, it feels like they're gonna have to pay a lot of dudes on that defense pretty soon. I just look at the free agent list for them, the internal guys, and it's not too bad. I mean, Rodney McLeod is another kind of defensive back, but he's 34. Anthony Walker Jr., off-ball linebacker they got for, I think they brought him in last year. He's 29. Shelby Harris, rotational defensive lineman, he's 33. So this was really their big defensive guy internally that needed a deal here soon, because Garrett's under contract. I guess Za'Darius Smith probably is on here as a free agent for next year. But anyways, the Denzel Ward, the corner, is locked up. The other guys are still on their rookie deals with a couple more years to go. So this feels right. This puts Delpit at like the 12th highest paid safety, I think, which feels pretty good. You want to keep this defense intact because it's proven that this is why they're winning games. So I'm all in for this one for them. And for the Dolphins, Austin Jackson, I mean, that's a guy that you and I ripped pretty heavy going into last season, when we did our full offensive line rankings, and then going into this season, we're like, there's some improvement, but they really still should have upgraded. I was so sure Isaiah Wynn was going to be starting over him by week 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I don't know where Isaiah Wynn is right now. I wonder if he got hurt. I don't even know. The funny part about the Austin Jackson thing, and first off, like, happy for him. I know you and I were like, this guy is not playing well, but like, I'm glad that he got this contract, and I'm glad he got was worthy of it. Dolphins fans are very happy. I was on Dolphins Twitter just kind of seeing how everyone felt about it. They are ecstatic. They feel like he's really improved, that he's really shown a lot. They think he's really on the way up to it. Tagovailoa had like an emotional response to it, like really happy for him, and thinks he's going to be a really, really solid piece moving forward. I have seen a lot of improvement from Jackson as a run blocker, and being there next to Robert Hunt on the right side is a pretty decent run blocking group. And Hunt makes it easier for him in pass pro. Jackson still loses his balance in pass pro too often for me. Still doesn't have a great anchor, but he's a good run blocker. Teron Armstead continues to get hurt, so if you can at least have a guy that's fine over there, and they continue to add pieces, hopefully, to this offensive line of guys that can at least play. I think I've put him at like the 28th highest paid tackle under this contract, which is like, I think, totally fine. I might not have done it, but with the other holes that they have on that line, with Armstead not being able to be healthy under this contract, then it's probably all fine in the end. What did you think about these deals, Ben?
Let me start with the Grant Delpit because I like that. We saw during the last offseason kind of, I don't want to call it a devaluation of safety because that wouldn't be quite accurate, but we did see safeties weren't quite as desirable as some other positions. And I think we've seen a couple of teams kind of pay for that defensively. I won't go into that side of it, but I like that the Browns have a good defense and they're like, well, we're going to keep this guy on the back end because we do need somebody back there. And it's not just quite so easy as my third round pick goes and takes over that next year and we're good. It's not quite that simple. So I like that. Now, I remember a time when nobody gave any money out during the season. You just didn't do it. Well, we're starting to see teams do it. I like getting a start in the offseason. That's cool. if they're just trying to copy what the Buffalo Bills do, which is re-sign all of your guys, then I'm not a huge fan of that because that's got a little bit of problems as a model too. But catching this guy as a good solid safety that covers your backside on the back end of a very good defense, and the money's not huge. You mentioned it, 3 and 36. That's pretty good. You're not going to be able to beat that in free agency. Even if you get a good draft pick, he's not likely to be better than Delpit, you know? So I like this for Cleveland. I like that deal. The Austin Jackson one, I'm still mixed on. So it always bothers me. And you know, it's a pet peeve of mine for a player to look lousy for 3 years, which he has, and then that fourth year look greatly improved. That always bothers me. It's like, well, you know, did I just get the perfect intersection of fourth year experience and desire to get that new contract? Is that really what's producing a spike here? And do I level back off in year 5 and 6? But for the Dolphins, and we talked about this all last offseason, for the Dolphins, they haven't drafted and developed a lot of positions very well, offensive line being one of them. So if you've got a guy who's producing anything at all here on the offensive line and you think he can keep doing it at some kind of a decent level, I'm okay with it. It's not a ton of money. It's 3 and 36. They can probably get out of it in a year, year and a half if they want to. So I'm okay with it, even though it's not my preferred method.
Isaiah Wynn is on the IR. I can confirm that. So I'll take that as a what's the betting term? Like a it's not a push, but I'll call it a push for
Right.
now. I would have been right. Anyways, let's see. You said something there that was interesting about Austin Jackson and because he, you know, the 3 years of bad play, he didn't get his fifth year option picked up. They declined his fifth year
Right.
option. Now, this
Right.
money I'm sure is going to be less next year as a fifth year than what they would have paid under the option, which is great. But yeah, then you tack on 2 more years. We know how it works. You could probably get out of it after 1 year with just a little bit of dead money, out of it out of two with no issues. But I
Yeah.
mean, they didn't get an extension though, with Christian Wilkins on the defensive side. So like, they got to pay that guy still. And then Robert Hunt and Connor Williams, their starting right guard and center, are both free agents after this year as well. So like, what, like, can you pay all three of those guys and continue to have room for, you know, the Tua contract? What's that situation? Like, there's a lot up in the air there. So you know, Austin Jackson locking them in is fine. You don't want to go too far backwards, but they still got some stuff that they need to do. So it'll definitely be interesting to see if this is just the first move in keeping this group together for next year, or if they were like, let's lock this one down because we don't know what's going to happen with those interior guys.
Yeah, it's a great point. Again, it's not my preferred method, but the Dolphins GM, Chris Greer, I have laid a pretty healthy amount of criticism on him over the years. And yet here he is with a coach who's doing extremely well and with a team that's winning, and he's doing it differently than I would do it. That's okay. As long as he's winning, I don't care. So, you know, have at it, man. You know, come back and see me in a year or two. We'll see how you're doing. Okay. If I don't like it, I'll criticize it some more. All right. Well, we've got a bunch of injuries to get to as always, and we'll do it right after this break.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports, ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes, and that's Tricky with two I's.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by Box Score Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Shore Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Shore Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back in as always. Let's cover some injuries, starting with Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert, fractured finger and having surgery on that. Ravens safety Kyle Hamilton, sprained MCL. He is week to week or day to day, depending on who you want to talk to and listen to. Simon.
Yeah, Kyle Hamilton, I'll hit first. Ian Rappaport first reported that it was going to be week to week for Hamilton. And then they talked to John Harbaugh just a couple hours later, and he was like, hey, he's probably fine. We'll see if he can play Saturday or not. So we'll see. Hamilton continuing to just have a great season. So do hope you could see him back on the field pretty soon. For the Chargers, Justin Herbert, I think he's getting surgery done Tuesday morning, I want to say. And they'll see like the results of it, how it looks after the surgery, and then decide or be able to determine how long he should be out for. It definitely feels like it's a possibility he could be done for the season. And look, the Chargers season is done anyways, I think. Not officially eliminated yet, but that loss against the Broncos probably all but sealed it. And man, it's just a bummer that you know, you talk about a year from hell for players and for teams and organizations. This was definitely that for the Chargers. And it feels like Herbert played his last game for Coach Staley this weekend, Ben.
Yeah, I the Chargers are a mess, unfortunately. It's one of those things that just keeps getting more depressing by the week, quite honestly. I'm not going to hammer them any more than that. But you're right. This isn't ending well. Even if they catch fire now, last year they caught fire and won like 8 or 9 games at the end of the year, and they're, you know, in the playoffs. Even if they caught fire now, it may be too late with that clogged AFC. I don't know that they've, you know, it kind of feels like that's not going to have a happy ending. I do want to talk about Kyle Hamilton. Hamilton was a guy last year who, even though he graded out pretty good, we all knew the Ravens were kind of covering up for him by moving him around and just hiding him off of his original spot. Well, this year, he's just blossomed, goodness gracious. And he's not even playing the deep safety all that much, which I thought would be his best spot. My gosh, with that deep outfield speed, I just thought that's his perfect. But no, he's in the box about 200 snaps. He's on the defensive line for about another 50 snaps. I mean, he's slot cornerback for like 350 mm-hmm. snaps. He is everywhere doing everything, putting that speed to use in a defense that we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, uses 15, 18 different players to a high degree of effectiveness. Really impressed with it. They weren't great this past weekend. That's okay. That'll happen. But anyway, missing Cal Hamilton for even a game would be a hindrance, but they're in the catbird seat right now in the AFC. So as long as they get him back healthy, I think they'll be okay there as well. But heck of a season for Kyle Hamilton so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a stud. So they can definitely make up for it, cover it up for a week or so. But long term, especially, they're going to want to get him back really sooner rather than later as they make that playoff push.
Yeah, and oddly enough, you know, we haven't talked about it a lot, but that 2022 draft class, the top end of it, while we saw some flashes last year, now that we're at the end of two seasons, it hasn't looked like a super great draft class. I mean, as far as that top end, yep. We've seen guys contributing and playing a lot, but Hamilton is really one of the leaders now, along with Sauce Gardner, of a group. Man, you're talking about edges and tackles and all up there in that top 10. Hamilton's worked his way up toward the top of that list, as has Sauce Gardner, who, you know, who never left the top of that list. But yeah, Hamilton's doing tremendous.
Absolutely.
All right. Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson with chest injury day to day. And Seahawks quarterback Geno Smith, groin injury. Give us updates on those.
Yeah, I'll hit Geno real quick because he's been dealing with a bunch of stuff. I mean, he is just banged up here at the end of the season. This is what happens when you're stand in the pocket, grip it, rip it kind of guy, and you know, you've got some a little bit of a receiver issue, a little bit of an O-line issue, but no run game early right now with Ken Walker out. Geno's just taking hit after hit after hit. I mean, he had the triceps injury after the game against the Cowboys, and then coming into this one, it was kind of reported, I think, like starting Tuesday-ish last week when they started reporting for practice, the groin stuff. It's been kind of deemed as a 2-week injury, so they sat him for San Fran, won him to play against Philadelphia. But the Seahawks have lost 4 straight now, Ben, and they're 6-7. It's going to be a tough go for them in the wild card. And then Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson, I mean, he finally gets back out there after the quad injury or hamstring injury. He's been out for weeks at this point. And then, you know, this kind of leads into the quarterback play, but they're in that miserable 0-0 game for three and a half quarters, whatever it is, against the Raiders. Josh Dobbs throws a literal hospital ball because Jefferson goes up, tries to get it, gets cracked in the ribs, chest area, does go to the hospital, get all checked out. Josh Dobbs gets benched in the game. I don't think Kevin O'Connell has made an official announcement on if it's going to be Dobbs or Nick Mullins that starts next week for the Vikings. But Jefferson maybe in doubt to play next week. Dobbs maybe in doubt to start. So Vikings and Seahawks both in the NFC wildcard picture continue taking some hits, Ben.
Yeah, and I'm going to start with the Josh Dobbs thing here because, I mean, any of these mid-level quarterbacks, mid-level to lower-tier quarterbacks, don't get too high on them, don't get too low on them. They're going to be up and down. I mean, that's everybody from the young guys with Ritter, Love, and Levis to the veteran like Dobbs. They're going to be up and down. Until they're not, until they show that they're a legit top 8, top 10 kind of a guy, they're going to be up and down. So don't get too high, don't get too low, just ride them out. I don't like them benching Dobbs. I really don't. I really wish that O'Connell had just said, hey, don't do something so stupid as to get Jefferson hurt. But other than that, just keep rolling with him, man. He's going to make some plays. He's going to do some couple dumb things. He's going to make plays. He was good enough earlier in the year, and he's going to come back up again. You know, it's just – it's the nature of these guys, you know? So I didn't like the benching, to be quite honest about it.
Yeah, I will be totally honest. I did not have my eyes glued to this game. I think I saw it on the ticker at like 9:44 in the fourth, and I saw the score, and I was just like, are we serious right now? So maybe it was more, and I could see O'Connell doing this, maybe it was more of a, hey, man, we've had 3 quarters of nothing. We just need to do something different for this game, and we'll try again next week. I could fully see O'Connell doing that. I was talking with Josh Linsan a couple weeks ago going into the Vikings bye week. He does his podcast, another Mike on the Vikes. And he, you know, we wanted to see Dobbs be the starter coming out because, you know, they were going through a couple of tough things. But look, Dobbs had never really had a moment to breathe with the Vikings offense coming out of the bye against the Raiders defense. That's, I mean, no points and all punts basically is not a great look. But yeah, I'm with you. I definitely wouldn't mind seeing him again unless they're just really comfortable with Mullins, who was supposed to be their backup and he was on IR when they had to go get Dobbs. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to track both the Vikings and the Seahawks kind of work through the muck of this NFC wildcard picture.
Yeah, and I will say, because it is a muck, Vikings are 7-6. They're the 6th seed right now. Even after the loss tonight, the Packers right now are still in as the 7th seed. Because it is mucky there on the NFC side. But you do see the seesaw effect of public opinion these days, largely because of social media. It's almost like people can't wait every 2 or 3 weeks to just run over to one end of the seesaw. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as these guys do something the opposite, they're running back to the other side. It's amazing. As a general manager, head coach, you got to be above that. You have to be a whole lot more stable, secure. You have to be a lot more reasonable about this. You can't be up and down. You can't ride that public opinion because it changes. You mentioned a few weeks ago people were down on Jordan Love and saying just trash him, get rid of him. You know, well, no, wait, give him a second here. You know, let him see what he can do. And just because he's had a good 4 or 5 weeks doesn't mean that he's the 10-year guy. You know, but keep sticking with him, supporting him, working through it, and the rest of these guys too. I feel the same way about Dobbs. Man, I wish they had stuck with him, but you know. I will say, you mentioned seeing that Vikings score on the ticker. I saw nothing to nothing, and in my head I thought, oh, that's the next round of games, and they've just gotten started. And I looked, and I'm like, no, that's the 4th freaking quarter. What the heck? What are these guys doing?
So they were a quarter away from making history of being the first 0-0 tie going into overtime. I think they're one of three games in NFL history to end the third quarter at 0-0. Just like, just incredible stuff, man. Just what a year. What a year we're having.
I've seen some college games that were that ugly where neither team could just get it going, you know, but it's not quite as normal to see that at the NFL level where, yeah, that was rough. All right, Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud, concussion, pretty brutal hit actually that he took there on the ground, and then wide receiver Nico Collins calf injury, Steelers edge rushers T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith both with concussions. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a rough go. So I mean, we just hit the NFC muck. AFC is just as murky. We'll talk about the Steelers in Thursday Night Football, but they come out of the loss. And you think things are going to go completely downhill for them in their playoff standings. Nope, they stay just about the same. Colts lose, Texans lose on the back of, the Texans walked into the game banged up. Tank Dell out for the year. Dalton Schultz was out for this one. I think Nico Collins, CJ Stroud, I think Will Anderson left in parts of this game, and a couple other players. I mean, just everybody for the Texans was getting hurt in this one. It was rainy in New York, you know what it's like playing in New York and on the field conditions, and it's really rainy, and it's the Jets defense. And listen, Stroud and the Texans offense weren't having a good game already. I mean, you talk about bad conditions for a rookie, and just this is the part of the year that the young guys really start to kind of feel the weight of, wow, this is a long NFL season. These are big guys. Not that I think Stroud was really for real slowing down. I mean, we saw him have some struggles. You know, I talked last week about how much he had to run around against the Jaguars. So it's starting to catch up to him a little bit. Teams are starting to catch up, but that Jets defense is just incredible. It's so tough for quarterbacks to play, plus the rain, plus missing all of his weapons. And now, you know, concussion protocol for Stroud, Watt, and Highsmith all are potentially in danger of missing next week. And for teams that are, what are they all, 7-6, trying to still stay in the playoffs? I think the Steelers are technically in right now. I think the Texans are on the outside looking in. And then Nico Collins, I still haven't seen yet if there's an update for him, but these soft tissue injuries, you know, you could expect that to be a week or two as well, or he could be back next week. But two teams competing for playoff contention in the AFC, dealing with some pretty major injuries.
Bit of a problem there for the Houston Texans, because you mentioned that Tank Dell, extremely productive receiver for the Texans, already out for the season starting last week. Nico Collins was the other highly productive receiver there for Stroud. Without those two guys, that's going to be a tough go. Now, whether Collins comes back or not within the next week or so, if he's not 100%, if he's somewhere around 75-80, you still got some challenges there for rookie quarterback. And you're right, Stroud, the past, say, 2 to 3 weeks, has looked more like what I expected him to look like for the start of the season. Now, I figure throughout the offseason, he recharges his batteries and we get the Stroud that we saw for most of this year. He's going to light it up. But you're right, it's a long season, 17, 18 weeks where you're getting, man, nobody's giving you any breaks. You enter no games with the talent advantage. You have no weeks off against the cream puff part of the schedule, nothing, every single week, every snap. And the Jets defense, supported by Zach Wilson this week, surprise, surprise, the Jets defense really stepped up. So it's coming apart a little bit for Houston. We'll see what they do with it. Right now they're still sitting at the 8th spot, so we'll see. You know, but they got the work cut out for them down the stretch.
Yeah, they play the Titans next week, which looks much different now after they just beat the Dolphins. They play the Browns in week 16, the Titans again in week 17, and then the Colts in week 18. Definitely a tough go for the Texans. The Steelers next week have the Colts. They have the Bengals, who are still very much in it after their big win against the Colts. Then the Seahawks and Ravens to close it out. So both teams definitely have a tough and competitive stretch, especially playing other teams vying for AFC playoff seeding.
Yeah, and I'll say this, because I've mentioned the randomizer, that this season, I shouldn't say never, we rarely see a season where the NFL is this random. It just random teams that you think you got figured out, you don't. We never do. I mean, it's been very few teams that are consistent from one month to the next. It reminds me, because we've all played the Madden games, and then before the Madden games, we played the old Tecmo football. that it really reminds me, because I've literally simulated hundreds and hundreds of these seasons. It reminds me of that computer randomizer that kicks in and just the unpredictability. Unless you're really fighting for your job, like a Staley with the Chargers, I'm not going to have much criticism for teams who barely miss the playoffs, because there's just so much going on, man. I mean, you can barely miss because of a game from September. You can barely get in because you got lucky with an injury and your other opponent didn't. I mean, I'm not going to criticize too many of these teams for barely missing the playoffs unless they were expected to be really good. This was where I'll draw the line with that. But a lot of randomization kicking in here.
Speaking of randomization, should we talk about Sunday Night Football?
Let's do it, man.
What a crazy night. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Philadelphia Eagles senseless 33-13. The Eagles don't score an offensive touchdown. Ben, yeah, initial thoughts coming out of this one?
Well, I didn't feel a whole lot different about either team coming out than I did going in. And I know that feels weird to say. I did expect the game to be tighter. But I didn't really, having watched the Eagles, I didn't really feel like they should have been, what was it, 10-1 a couple of weeks ago. I thought they should have been a little bit less than that. And yet, even though they've had back-to-back drubbings, I mean, they haven't looked good. They could still win the Super Bowl. They are a legit Super Bowl team. I know the defense hasn't looked great, and I know the offense hasn't been quite as scintillating as it was early in the season. Okay, but I didn't really think they were quite as good as their 10-1 record suggests. And I know they're not as bad as these past 2 weeks would suggest. They're just not. So come playoff time, as long as they're reasonably healthy, the Eagles are going to be right there as a legit Super Bowl contender, ready to punch anybody in the mouth. And maybe they get there, maybe they don't. But, you know, this game just happened to be a good game for the Cowboys. What really jumped out, though, is Dak Prescott, and I know you're going to talk about him, not only are other people not afraid of Eagles cornerbacks right now, but Dak Prescott in particular is especially not afraid of the Eagles secondary right now. The stuff he was throwing this week, my gosh, he just looked so impressive this week. Absolutely loved watching what he could do this week.
Dak has never seen a window that he did not like, man. I mean, my goodness. Ever since seeing, going from even late career Ben Roethlisberger as a Steeler fan to what the Steelers have put out there as in the quarterback position the last couple of years, I just have such an appreciation for a guy that'll just hit that back foot and grip it and rip. So like Geno and Dak, and obviously, I mean, the high level guys, Mahomes and Allen's when they're throwing it. But man, dude, if you just want to sit back there and let it rip and see what happens, like I'm all here for it. Jake Ferguson has become one of my favorite tight ends in the NFL. That dude will just talk trash to anybody, and work that seam and work the middle of the field like it's nobody's business. And Dak just puts it on people. It's been incredible. And look, we say all that about Dak. It started for Dallas with the run game. I mean, they had 138 yards on the ground in this one. It's their third highest mark on the season, and it would be fourth in the league as an average per game basis. And on the flip side for the Eagles, in the last 4 weeks, they've given up no less than that 138 yards on the ground. So they've been soft against the run the last month, and Dallas has been up and down with the run game, but the Dallas interior offensive line took full advantage. I mean, Zach Martin and Tyler Smith might be the best guard duo in the league. And they were just working the Eagles defensive tackles, man. It was crazy to see that. That was the first thing that stood out to me. Just like the push they got, they scored on their first four drives, all four drives of the half, the first half they scored on three touchdowns. And they were primarily doing it by just running it right up the middle.
Yeah, they were. And I'm going to add to it with, generally speaking, the Cowboys, I think, have been the best pass protection team this year on the offensive line. And I say that because Dak Prescott has had more time to throw the football in the games I've watched than anybody this year, more than Mahomes, more than Jalen Hurts, more than just about anybody. In the games I've watched, Prescott has had the longest and the cleanest pocket. So not only is he And again, I don't know where he ranks in terms of actual time to throw, but you just have clean pockets for him to step up in. And when he's got that, and when he can hand the football off, he's almost unbeatable at that point. I don't mean to say in the big games he's unbeatable, but when he gets his clean pocket and when he gets to hand the football off, he can really pick you apart. I mean, he just absolutely can. And he did that in this game with some of these throws. So I absolutely love what the Cowboys did. How serious, how much weight do we give this game for the Cowboys to actually be a legit Super Bowl team? Because now everybody's running and saying, hey, Cowboys Super Bowl favorite. Well, maybe not. Let's see. Let's see how they do in the playoffs, right? But heck of a win for the Cowboys. They really haven't done this in a big moment very often over the past several, many years now.
It was just good to see a couple weeks in a row them do it against a good team. Even though we mentioned the Seattle struggles, we know Dallas can still, or Seattle can still hang with anybody, as they showed in that Dallas game. But then, yeah, for Dallas to just come in and just flat out dominate this Eagles team, which offensively didn't actually look that bad, despite not scoring a touchdown. They unfortunately just fumbled the ball every time they got in the red zone. Three fumbles on potential scoring drives. Only one in the first half, and it felt like the game was kind of over at halftime anyways. But when the Eagles weren't fumbling in the first half on those drives, they were trading touchdowns for field goals. And you can't do that either, right? You can't, in what's going to be a high-scoring game against another top, let's say, six team in the NFL, you can't trade touchdowns for field goals, especially if then in the second half you continue to turn the ball over. And they forced the turnover, right? They got the fumble six to make it 24-13. And you kind of felt like, okay, they could do something here, especially because then the Dallas on the next drive only got a field goal. So at that point, it's what, 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. You're down two touchdowns with a little bit of momentum. But Philly just couldn't do anything. They turn it over on downs. They have a fumble, and then it's the end of the game on their next three drives. So really just Philly never got anything going. I've seen some Eagles fans and analysts just, kind of talk about like the AJ Brown route tree. He wasn't really using the middle of the field. Stephon Gilmore was having a great game covering him. The Eagles, the last couple games have struggled to get their run game going. It's because they've been falling behind in these games. So they're not, when you asked us about our favorite offenses, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I talked about them and the Lions, ironically, teams that could do stuff in the run game, different things, and then that unlocks the pass game. But if you get down, 14-0, 14-3, 17-7, you can't really rely on that run game quite as much. And those first couple of drives, they were running with some success, but they had to go away from it when you get down by too much. And for Philly, that's not a recipe for them to win, unfortunately, especially when Dallas can just score on, 80% of their possessions.
Yeah, and we have seen the Eagles so many times this year come from behind and win, and specifically come from behind by double digits. But when you're playing the Cowboys and the 49ers, that's a lot more difficult to do. They're not just going to lay down for you. They're not just going to quit. They're not going to start playing soft. Micah Parsons is going to keep coming just as hard, even harder, when he's got a double-digit lead. So is the rest of that Cowboys defensive line. And same for the 49ers. They're not going to back off any just because they have a big lead. So the Eagles have had their inconsistencies. And Eagles fans, listen, I've listened to them almost all season. Eagles fans know that this team is not like last year's team, but that's okay. It doesn't have to be, but they do have to start figuring out other ways to be just as good this year. And they've got a chance to still win the Super Bowl. There's no question about it, but they're not the same team as last year. This is a very different football team.
Yeah. Yeah. They're missing that just explosive element. We've talked about it on the show. They feel much more of a team that is grinding out wins, and while anecdotally we're happy with that, we're like, oh, it's good you can grind games out, like that doesn't usually boat the team that grinds out most of their wins often doesn't translate to a lot of postseason success. And then on the flip side, you compare it to a Dallas, who it's like we either blow teams out or we get blown out by another really good team. So which side of the coin would you rather be on? And after week 14, it's Dallas. After week 15, we could be back on Philly.
It's gone back and forth so many times this year. So anyway, a huge win for Dallas. I enjoy seeing. I'm not a Dallas hater. I know a lot of people are, and I totally get it. I'm not a Dallas hater. I enjoy seeing them catch some good wins here. So on a side note, tell us about Mike McCarthy a little bit and the appendicitis.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? Tuesday, just, you know, the day we dropped this podcast, all this news breaks. Mike McCarthy checks himself in the hospital, has an acute case of appendicitis, gets his appendix taken out mid-week, and he comes out of surgery and he's worried about missing prep time for the game, and he's on the sideline coaching Sunday night. Just like, first off, glad he's okay. Second of all, dang, man, heck of a coaching job. Maybe can you get something a little more minor done every week, or at least before some more big games? Go get, I don't know, just a little Botox or something. I'm not saying he needs it. I don't really pay that much attention, but like, I don't know, just get some kind of procedure done. Just see what happens. You know, just go get a cavity filled that you've been waiting on. Do something before the next playoff game. I don't know. In all seriousness, glad he's okay. And a heck of a game. Heck of a game plan. Heck of, you know, the play calling sequences were great. They were up by so much, you couldn't notice any weird in-game management stuff that you would see from him. So heck of a game, Mike McCarthy. Good on you.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know if I was or not. I feel like years ago, I was one of the first to kind of be raking Mike McCarthy over the coals for, you know, just not winning very, very much in the postseason with Aaron Rodgers. I feel like I was one of the first on that bandwagon. And I continued it all the way through here in the Dallas years. But this year, I really feel like he's done a good job. And if they win, I'll give him all the credit in the world, because the offense is not worse. It's better, at least for the past 5, 6, 7 weeks now. The defense has continued to light it up, even though they've shown some weeks where they give up some points, but they've continued to light it up. Here they are in first in the NFC, or second, first or second, I forget which. I'd have to look back at the standings. They've got a chance to actually win the freaking division over the Eagles. I mean, everything's smiling right now in Dallas. So, and they did it without, I can't even remember the guy that they lost.
Kellen Moore.
Yes. Yeah, they're doing not Kellen Moore, whose offense looks worse over here in Charger land, you know. So hats off to McCarthy. I'll give him all the credit in the world the more they continue to win.
Yeah, the whole Kellen Moore, Mike McCarthy thing is not paying off well for the us NFL nerds that are on Twitter that are like, oh man, this is gonna be so great for the Chargers and the Cowboys. Yeah. Now we did say on this podcast, we didn't think Kellen Moore leaving would affect Dallas in the regular season. We were more worried about McCarthy being in charge of play calling and game management postseason. So we'll still see where that comes out. But I mean, I know I was personally very wrong on Kellen Moore showing up to LA and just like exploding the Chargers offense. That one did not work out for me.
Yeah, and I would give the Chargers the benefit of the doubt if they didn't look so horrible. I mean, good gosh, the past 2 or 3 weeks, they have looked awful. I mean, it just looks sick. So, no benefit of the doubt given.
Sorry, Thursday Chargers. Night we football. came back by.
Speaking of ugly, Thursday night football, the Patriots and the Steelers, 21-18. Not as ugly as a lot of us expected it to be, but get us started there on the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Put the Patriots in the bucket of the lowest end team of, we're going to just try to do our thing, and if we don't make any mistakes, it might be okay. I say that, and I'm like, I don't even believe it, because they looked horrible all season long. So it's not even that. The Steelers were bad in this one for a second game in a row. And, you know, you want to give the Patriots their flowers. You want to give Bailey Zappi's flowers. You want to talk about Belichick and that defense and all of that. And man, for that first drive to let Bailey Zappi just kind of march downfield and score that opening touchdown, that automatically you're feeling some bad vibes. Now I'm gonna give a little context into just how much stuff the Steelers are doing wrong right now, and this is in no way excuses made by a Steelers fan or anything. And I know it's a little in the weeds for this podcast, but the Steelers went into the game with three legitimate outside linebackers. They sat Marcus Golden down. They have so many injuries at safety and linebacker, special teams value, yada, yada, all that nerdy stuff. So, like, you know what? Watt, Highsmith, and Herbig are all healthy. We'll just roll the three. Well, TJ Watt gets kneed in the head by Ezekiel Elliott on the first play of the game. Apparently gets concussed on that play. The independent neurologist said he could go back out there as a whole thing. And they're like, man, you have Highsmith and Herbig now. And then Watt gets back out there for a few plays, and you're like, okay, great. Then Highsmith gets hurt early in the second quarter. And you're like, oh my gosh, man, what is going on here? The Steelers generated no pass rush. And I said this at the top of the show. I've been saying it all season. If you're playing a backup quarterback or a young quarterback, you need to get pressure. You need to get home. You need to put him on his butt. Speed up the process. He hasn't been out there as long as the starter. And they didn't, no sacks in this game. No sacks in this game. Two sacks in this game, which is really bad because Zappy took five sacks last week. Just nothing on the defensive end. Minka Fitzpatrick was in the locker room questioning teammates' want to and willingness to work for stuff, and that's not anything you want to hear. They shut him out. The Steelers shut out the Patriots in the second half. But the flip end of that is the Patriots scored 21 first half points after being shut out by the Chargers defense the week before. So it really all starts there. The Steelers were down two scores pretty early in this one, and they're not built to come back from that. And they're doing it with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback, which is also a scary sight to see. Those were the first thoughts, Ben. What did you think about this coming out of this game?
For me, it was all about the Steelers. And again, I don't mean to take away from the Patriots win, because hats off to any team who can look as bad as the Patriots have looked this year and come back and pull off a victory. Hats off to them for hanging in there. But, you know, I'm a huge believer in the Steelers. You know, I believe in their talent base. I believe in Mike Tomlin as the coach. I believed in Kenny Pickett, although I'm quickly getting off of that one. Not completely, but I'm close, you know. They missed two golden opportunities here against two really bad teams, the Cardinals and the Patriots. And that's where I'm off on the Steelers the most is I can understand if you're not as sharp as I expected you to look. And I can understand if you're floating around 500 because Kenny Pickett just can't produce enough offense or because you've got the wrong offensive coordinator. I'm on board with all of that. Where I'm struggling to have any real explanations here for the Steelers is, why are you losing to the Cardinals and the Patriots? I mean, they have been awful. They have been dreadful this year. You just shouldn't be losing to these two teams. So that's where I'm struggling to have any kind of explanation for Pittsburgh, even though you mentioned the injuries in this game. I know that has an effect. It really starts to hurt what you can do. And yet, man, you know, it's Tomlin, man. And you still got some pieces there. You've got pieces. You got pieces the New York Giants don't have, and the New York Giants are finding ways to scrap and compete. And it doesn't quite feel like Pittsburgh is doing that the way I would want them to. That's really what's bothering me the most here.
I think DeVito now after this game might have more multi-touchdown games than Kenny Pickett, which is not good. And look, to get back to this game specifically before I go down the whole rabbit hole, Pickett was not even in this game, obviously. We got the full Mitch Trubisky experience. He ran around a little bit, and you're like, oh, good, you can scramble. He threw some really horrible balls, a couple interceptions. One got called back. He had a decent touchdown to Deontay Johnson, one that Kenny Pickett probably wouldn't have thrown, but still not very accurate. And this offense just couldn't get going for so long that it was their worst rushing performance since the Week 8 loss against the Jaguars, which was the last time that Steelers Twitter was down as bad as they are right now. They had been rushing for 130 plus for five straight games, Ben, and they put up 82 yards on the ground against this Patriots defense, which isn't too surprising because this is a very good Patriots run defense. But still, I mean, that was the whole thing. They couldn't run the ball. And then you're putting the ball in Mitch Trubisky's hands. They late in the fourth quarter, just before the 2-minute warning, I think there was like 2:05 left in the quarter. It's third and two and they're driving. And they draw up a pass play on third down, And then they drop a deep shot to Deontay Johnson on 4th and 2 with Mitch Trubisky. And she's like, what? What's going on? This was the stuff that was supposed to be cleaned up. I know you can't run the ball, but you have two. I forget how many timeouts they had at the time. But you have a timeout and the 2-minute warning built in, right? So it's 3rd and 2. Run the ball, get a yard, come out of the 2-minute warning, run it again, get another yard, and then you have the full 2 minutes. You're already in. They're already in the Patriots territory at that point. It's just weird. There's definitely a little something like with the Bills and what McDermott has been doing in terms of game planning and decisions in the game. There's definitely something off in terms of what this identity is and what's the best way for this. How is this roster built to win? Because even you know the touchdown, you know they were able to get 18 points, make it a game at the end. But part of that is coming off of a pump block where they can turn around and get a touchdown a couple plays later. It was a little discouraging. Whereas, okay, this team's identity is going to be to run the ball first, and even though they're facing a good team in those weighty downs that Tama likes to say, 3rd and short, 4th and short, you can't run the ball for 2 yards. So they made it hard for themselves. You know, I was saying on the pod with Robertson last week, it was a rare year where they did their homework early, right? 7-4, and I think 5-1 or 4-1 in the division or in the conference, something like that so far. But then these two straight losses, and now Colts, Bengals, Seahawks, Ravens, they've got their work cut out for them to stay in the playoff picture, Ben.
Yeah, they do. Everybody in the AFC does, and it's going to go back and forth. We're literally going to come down, guaranteed, we're going to come down to the last few minutes of two or three different games on the last Sunday of the year to figure out who gets in the playoffs. It's going to come. Yep. You know, probably going to be 10 or 12 different teams waiting for the results of those last two or three games. I mean, is what it's going to come down to. And, you know, you got to take advantage of every opportunity. But honestly, the reason we have, you know, all these teams in this quagmire is because they're really none of them quite good enough to take advantage of opportunities. So they're just going to keep kind of trading in and out each week. You know, it's fun, but it's maddening all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else on Steelers and Patriots?
No, not without being a sad Steeler fan. So, yeah, that's about it.
All right. I think our last thing for the evening is the one last thing around the NFL. So what you got? Or a couple last things around the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun day. It was a fun Sunday of football. The one thing I wanted to mostly highlight, I was able to catch the first half of the Jaguars-Browns game. Trevor Lawrence ends up playing in this game, Ben, which is incredible, considering what the injury looked like when it happened last week, what the prognosis seemed to be coming out of that game, and just the fact that they're playing such a physically dominant Browns defense. You're like, there's no way they're going to throw Lawrence out there. And he played, and you know what? Yeah, he had the interceptions, but he looked pretty good. I watched that game to just see what he looked like. It didn't feel like his mobility was affected. It didn't feel like his throwing power was affected in terms of being able to use his legs. He was able to move around the pocket. He took a couple sacks by the ankle and continued to keep playing. So whether it was he was so juiced up he didn't feel anything anyways, or he felt everything, tough as nails to play that way. And I saw two of his three interceptions in watching the first half. And it wasn't, I expected it to be like, he felt like he had to throw into a tight window because he was limited or he couldn't get enough power on a throw and, you know, had some bad accuracy issues, something like that. But no, one was basically an arm punt just on first down, which you don't like to see, but it was kind of just a ball he threw deep and was hoping for a win one-on-one and it didn't happen. And then the other was a miscommunication with him and Calvin Ridley, where Ridley was open on a slant and completely just missed looking for the football and Lawrence threw it. And shout out to the Browns. I mean, they were very good. They do what they've been doing all year in terms of the defense, but also just like, I think Trevor Lawrence is fine. Dude is tough as all nails and he had a lot of nice balls and they almost came back and won this game, man. So shout out to the Jags and shout out Trevor Lawrence. They have some work to do still, but I think they'll be all right the rest of the way.
They do. They're sitting in a good spot, and if they get, listen, they're. I really don't think they're going to catch that one or two spot. But if they catch the three or the four, either one, then they're sitting in a spot where they can make a run in the playoffs, and that might be in the Super Bowl. Like, there's no reason that can't be. I mean, they're good enough in that AFC to be thinking about that. So, healthy Lawrence is key. I've got two different things here for my last thing around the NFL. Number one is kind of a hot take. I don't mean for it to be, but I think it kind of is. I think two of the most dangerous teams in the AFC right now wouldn't even be in the playoffs if the playoffs started today. And that is, for me, the Denver Broncos at 7-6, and then the Buffalo Bills at 7-6. Right now, they're in the 9 and the 11 spots. But you talk about two teams, the Bills, of course, obviously, that almost goes without saying, but they're playing better the past 2 or 3 weeks. They look like they have mojo back, energy back. They look like they're in it. They look like they've got their brains in the games. I mean, it really looks like they are in the games. And then, of course, the Denver Broncos, what they've been over the past 6 weeks. Both of these teams, I wouldn't pick them to win the Super Bowl. You talk about teams that could upset and surprise some people as 6 and 7 seeds on that AFC side. I mean, listen, we've already seen the Chiefs lose to both of these teams. The Jaguars could lose to either of these teams in the playoffs. The Browns, the Steelers, the Colts, they could all lose to these teams in the playoffs. The Dolphins, I think, could lose to either team in the playoffs. And that just kind of leaves the Ravens. So, I mean, listen, the Ravens don't really want to play either of these teams either, but I think the Ravens would win those matchups. But those are two scary teams, and it just goes to show how deep the AFC is right now. Maybe they neither one make the playoffs, Denver and Buffalo, but I do think they are very dangerous right now, the way they are playing. Both very differently. The other thing is next week's schedule. Looking ahead, the Thursday nighter is pretty rough. So it's Chargers Raiders. So maybe keep an eye on that one. Maybe catch up on some Netflix stuff that week. I don't know. We'll check it out. But good news is we got not one, not two, but three Saturday games this week. So you've got the Vikings Bengals at 1 o'clock. We've got the Steelers Colts at 4:30. We've got the Broncos and Lions at 8:15 that night. So quite a Saturday lineup. We get the normal bait the normal-ish Sunday lineup, and then we've got Monday Night Football as well. So pretty good week to look forward to for football, even though Thursday nighter isn't necessarily a great one. That's all I got.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to perform a trade with the wife of Thursday night for Saturday afternoon, aren't I? That's how that's gonna work
Yes.
out. That's fine. I can do that. Sunday night Ravens Jags. That's gonna be a fun one. Oh, that's a good Sunday night game. Monday Eagles Seahawks. Yeah, that'll work. We might have to make a different game, our third game. And not talk Chargers Raiders. I was ready to talk about Zion Johnson and Rayshon Slater. I was going to give updated scouting reports on those guys. When all else fails, I just watch the offensive linemen.
Right.
But yeah, might be worth skipping that. Good call by you.
Cowboys Bills on Fox at 4:25 Sunday too.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one. What's the early slate? That's some less interesting. Bears Browns. I want to see what Justin Fields looks like against that Browns defense. He's having some good games. That'll be good stuff. Really excited to see that.
Buccaneers Packers could be an elimination game, basically
Wow.
ish, 6 and 7 each.
And yet also two potential division winners.
Absolutely. Why
Sorry,
not?
Lions. Sorry, Lions. Jared Goff, he's back. All right, Ben.
Is.
Anything else before we get out of here?
Now, if you've listened this long to our 2-hour episode without Ronan, thank you for hanging with us. We've enjoyed it.
I need Ronan back. Ronan, come back. Happy birthday. Can't wait till you're back, man. But in the meantime, for me, for Ben, for Ronan, who will be back, nobody worry. This has been the Stat Sheet Podcast. Thank you for checking it out. Make sure you're checking out all the pods on Box Score Network. Make sure you're following at B Score Network and at Stat Sheet Pod on Twitter. Thank you all so much. Have a good week. We will talk to you soon.